Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The political map of this presidential race appears to be changing day by day. Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris appears to be gaining ground and blazing new paths to 270 electoral votes needed to win. Republican Donald Trump seems to have lost what could be seen as the glide path that he had to the White House. Things look a lot different not that long ago before President Joe Biden stepped aside from his reelection quest. But there are still 83 days before Election Day. Early voting in Texas begins on Monday, October 21st, and that's just in 68 days. To help us break down what we're looking at in the polls with press coverage and hopefully getting to a peaceful certification of the election, we're joined by Matthew Dowd. He is a pundit, campaign consultant. He was the chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney 2004 presidential election. And Matthew, welcome to The Source.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So how do you see the race shaping up right now between both candidates? How would you, what's handicapped that?
Sure. So there's as you mentioned in the lead-in, there's been a fundamental change in the race in the last 30 days. And I would say it's akin to a real tectonic shift in the plates of our politics. And it was set off by Joe Biden sort of detonating a bomb on the fault line by stepping back and then endorsing Vice President Harris. And that has shifted the race in a couple of ways. First, the enthusiasm advantage that Donald Trump had prior to that date is gone, and now Vice President Harris has an enthusiasm advantage. The second thing is among independent or swing voters, which is absolutely key, it's now gone from a Donald Trump lead over Joe Biden to a Vice President Harris lead over Donald Trump. And so that shift has all been pre-convention, which is next week, Democratic convention next week. All of that shift has happened. And so right now the race, in my view, has gone from 3.5 weeks ago to advantage Donald Trump in the race to as of today, it's advantage Vice President Harris in the race.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to give us your handicap of what you're seeing in this election, if you've got a question for Matthew Dowd about being on the inside of these campaigns, give us a call. I would love to hear your take and your questions, your comments, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Matthew, you've also been online saying that the polling that we're seeing could be wrong because it's old. Yep. And actually, Kamala Harris, she could be doing better right now than when these polls were taken. Tell me more about that.
Sure. So some of the polls, there were some polls out today that everybody seemed to focus on, which is done by the Cook Political Report, a national sort of tracking of elections. And it all showed an advantage for Vice President Harris in some of the key states like Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and North Carolina and Arizona. But what was unstated in that is those polls were actually out of the field. They came out of the field and they were finished on August 2nd. So that was 12 days ago. And so everything since then has been, there's been basically a positive trajectory in the last 10 to 12 days for Vice President Harris. So to me, those polls are showing where the race was 12 days ago. And I think it's a lagging indicator of where the race is today. So my expectation is that when we see polls in the coming week or 2 weeks, we're going to show a much more distinct advantage for Vice President Harris in the battleground states.
Donald Trump has not been able to find his footing in coming up with a way to respond to the Harris campaign. He's continuing with his grievances and complaining about that Biden should still be the candidate and complaining about other weird things. I wonder, though, so my feeling is, tell me what you think about this. This is my crazy idea. Steve Bannon is in jail right now, and he's been kind of like the intellectual author of what the Republican Party is about these days. Are we seeing, if Bannon was, still doing his podcast and was out and about right now, do you think things would be different?
I don't know, but I don't think so, because here's the problem: is the premise of the entire Trump infrastructure and his own psyche was based on the idea that he was going to run against, quote unquote, an incompetent incumbent president. That was the entire premise of their campaign and his sort of emotional state of the race. When that fundamentally altered, is one, he's running against somebody younger and more energetic and more vigorous than him on one hand. And two, Vice President Harris has actually captured the change aspect of the campaign. And so it's almost as if Donald Trump has become the incumbent in this race and Vice President Harris is the challenger in this race. And that fundamentally altered the race. And it's a good campaigns will adapt to a changing environment, but it's hard sometimes when the candidate gets so fixated at how he's going to run the thing in one way. I don't think Steve Bannon or anybody could have like adjusted that. It's up to the maturity of Donald Trump to change his way. And I think we've all seen a question about his capacity to be able to fundamentally change on the run and on the fly.
Let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255. We have Jeannie, and Jeannie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question, and I guess both of them are going to be questions. First, I don't understand how a convicted felon can be running for president. I thought that eliminated you if you were a convicted felon, and he's already been convicted of one thing, so there's that. And two, jumping on this man that's running as a running mate with Harris is a little surprising for me. I mean, this man did dedicate 25 years or more of his life, you know, toward the military. I mean, it wasn't full service, but boy, you were on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I'm wondering why, Trump has two sons, and there was Trump. How come none of them served in the military? And my kind of a weird statement, which really would get him upset, is Barron is of a draft age, and Barron right now could register to join the military without parental consent.
Right. All right. Well, Jeannie, thank you so much for that. And get to we have about a minute and a half before we go to break, but you can start answering the question, Matthew.
Sure, I can answer the question pretty quick. The first off, there's no constitutional provision that says you can't be a felon and run for office. Now, there's questions whether or not you can vote in certain states and be a felon, and Donald Trump couldn't vote in certain states in the course of this. I don't think he could vote in New York in this being a convicted felon. So you can run. The only requirement is you be over 35 and you be born in the United States, both of which he satisfies. And the second part is, it's amazing to me that they're using this attack on Governor Walz while they have the lead candidate basically avoided the draft because of quote unquote bone spurs back during the Vietnam War. And he has sons who have never even come close to wanting to serve the country in a way that would show some sacrifice. So I think they're just struggling to come up with anything, but I actually think this is a mistake because it's going to bounce back off the VP conversation and right to Donald Trump, who has no leg to stand on as regards military service.
He's got those bone spurs to stand on, so there's that. All right, we're going to take a break. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment about where this race is going, are we being fair to both candidates and these campaigns? We want to hear from you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source will continue after this one-minute break. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking politics with Matthew Dowd. He's a pundit and a campaign consultant. He was the chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney 2004 presidential election. He's also an author. His book is Revelations on the River, Healing a Nation, Healing Ourselves. And the river is the Blanco River because he lives up in Wimberley. So, Matthew, tell me a little bit about this book.
It's a book I wrote. It was the third book, the first book I co-wrote. Then I wrote another book called A New Way. And this one was basically my sense of sort of the idea that we get revelations, not in the sort of biblical sense, but more in the sense of that we see things that change our thought processes. And it was a sort of an analysis of my own sort of sense over the last 20 years while I sat by the Blanco River in my place in Wimberley, and just sort of new perspectives on things in life and leadership and the way the world was. And that's what it sort of things that came to me of things I learned along the way.
Sometimes it's good to unplug and get away from the craziness of these of the politics, I guess.
Yes, it is.
But so, you know, you know Texas politics. You were going to run for lieutenant governor, but you didn't. But so there is some now talk, because Harris is doing so well, that maybe Texas could be, you know, it could be razor thin, and maybe Texas could flip blue. What are your thoughts?
So to give your listeners a little perspective, I was involved in Lloyd Benson's campaign for Senate in 1988, and then I ran Bob Bullock's two campaigns for lieutenant governor in 90 and 94, and was actually an advisor to Ann Richards as well in that race. And so I think I'm one of the few people, the last people to run a winning statewide Democratic campaign in Texas in 94. So I'm really familiar. I think that Vice President Harris has a legitimate shot. I wouldn't put it, say she's favored, but she has a legitimate shot at winning Texas. As you know, David, this race in 2012, Obama lost Texas by 16, and in 2016, Hillary Clinton lost it by 9, and in 2020, Joe Biden lost it by 5.5%. So it's been slowly closing the gap nationally in this. And as the population shift, this will be the first race, presidential race in Texas, where the white share of the population that votes is going to be less than 60%, the other occupied by Latino, Hispanic, African-American, Asian, and other. And so all of those dynamics, I think, are creating more and more an opportunity for Texas to be a swing purple state. And I think that Colin Allred race for U.S. Senate against Ted Cruz, I think he's got a real shot at winning that race for the first statewide Dem to win in 30 years in this race. And so I think it's an outside shot for VP Harris, and they ought to keep an eye on it. And I think it's a real shot for the U.S. Senate for Colin Allred.
The other factors I'm looking at, because I saw a poll yesterday that came out for Texas, said that there was 6 points separating Harris and Trump now. And I also think about how we have a county in Texas named after the Democratic candidate. And but they don't factor in Bobby Kennedy Jr. He's now on the Texas ballot, and he's polling in about 6% and he's taking most of those away from possible Trump voters. And then the abortion issue also on the ballot. It's not directly on the ballot, except in Amarillo, but still, we're going to be. You think there could be some surprises?
Yeah, I think that if we wake up on Election Day on November 5th or November 6th, the day after, I wouldn't be shocked if that for the first time in, as I said, 30 years, a Democrat wins a statewide race, and Ted Cruz loses. And that the race for president is exceedingly, exceedingly close. That wouldn't shock me at all if that happened, because as you mentioned, all of those dynamics, and then you add to it the shifting demographics, and then you add to it the lack of voters in suburban areas wanting to support Republicans. We've now gone from, you know, Harris County used to be Republican, and Dallas County used to be Republican, and Tarrant County used to be Republican. Now all of them are moving quickly towards the Democratic column. So I think Texas is one to keep an eye on.
There's always these complaints that they can't campaign in Texas because it's so big and so expensive. And I wonder, why don't they just target like Abilene, Amarillo, Lubbock, Snyder, some of these communities, and just really hit those places hard, these rural-ish communities, and start trying to, you know, do something there? So that's
Texas is expensive. It's the state with the most medium. It's got 18 media markets. So it's the most expensive state in the country to campaign in, more expensive than California and New York, more expensive. And it's really hard to travel in. I mean, it's got the biggest geography outside of Alaska, and Alaska only has less than 1 million votes. and Texas will cast more than 11 million in this election in cycle. And so I think what will help more in Texas, instead of, you know, VP Harris going to, you know, Abilene or Lubbock or something or somewhere in East Texas, is what's the national conversation and dynamic, because that obviously bleeds into Texas like it does every other state. I think what they will do, this is my expectation, is they'll watch Texas. And if in the last 3 weeks or so they do research and find out it's doable, then I think you'll see resources come to Texas in the final 2 or 3 weeks.
Let's go to a caller, Elaine. And Elaine, you're on the air. Go ahead. It's your turn.
Hi. Yes, sir. I heard this remark earlier about his bone spurs. I had that surgery. It took 15 minutes. He could have had surgery to have those fixed. And if you've got bone spurs, how can you be out on the golf course all day long? And also, my husband went into basic training at 17 years of age. You know, Trumps have done nothing. And he only takes his foot out of his mouth long enough to put the other one in.
All right. Well, Elaine, thank you so much for helping us understand a little bit more about having a bone spurs and those complications. So, but this whole swift boating of Tim Walz, as I understand it, and my memory may be foggy, but you had a falling out with the Bush-Cheney campaign over their actual swift boating of Senator Kerry, right?
So after the campaign was over, I had a falling out with Bush over the war. But during it, I was chief strategist in 2004. And this swift boat thing against Kerry was a separate element that was done outside the campaign. And anytime there was conversation within the campaign about, like, I would say, this is a mistake. We don't want anything to do with this, attacking John Kerry on his record, while we have a guy that basically served and avoided the getting involved in the war, while a guy actually was on various, puts his life in danger, I think is, one, is wrong, and two, is a political mistake. And so it was never part of the Bush campaign effort. It was separate from it. And in the end, I believe, and it's been demonstrated, that nearly every single thing the swift boat folks said, who happened to be now the same guy that did that in 2004, is Chris LaCivita, is running the Trump campaign, is doing it again. Same exact guy doing it again. Was lies then, and it's lies now.
Do you think that Donald Trump is not being held to the same standard that Joe Biden was? I mean, are we due a New York Times editorial calling for Donald Trump to step down, as they wrote one for Joe Biden?
I thought they should have done it back at the same time they did it for Joe Biden. They should have said that, they should have asked for both. I didn't understand that. And then once Joe Biden stepped back, I don't understand why they said, okay, now it's your time, you know, Mr. Trump, your time to sort of take a look at this. And then after his performance at the bizarre press thing that he did, where he basically did a monologue, never answered the question, and said some rather bizarre things. And then this thing yesterday with Elon Musk, which is another weird, bizarre thing going on. I still don't know. I'm waiting patiently for the New York Times to call for Donald Trump to step back. My guess is it's not going to happen, but I don't really get, if they ask Joe Biden, why they're not asking Donald Trump.
We still have some time before Election Day. It's 68 days before early voting in Texas, 83 days before Election Day. Are you thinking that there's still a lot of runway here?
Well, here's what I think. I think that the occupation, that what time will be occupied by the Democratic convention for the next week. And then we basically are getting to Labor Day. And the only, I think, real fundamental adjustment of this race is going to only come from the debates, if and when they happen. They're supposedly going to be one on ABC, but Donald Trump is now saying he wants to do the Fox one first. So we'll see if that one happens. And then there's supposed to be a VP debate. To me, in the final stages of the elections, while TV ads are important and travel isn't important, the only ways to really change this race are from an event like a debate. And so that, to me, is the most crucial elements really in this campaign, is what happens with the debates and how do the candidates perform at them.
Harris is being criticized for not talking or doing a press conference. And so is that fair?
No, I don't. I mean, first of all, she was vice president. She did all kinds of press questions, all kinds of things. I think it's a little ego, in my view, a little egocentric for the press. I don't think like the voters are sitting there thinking, oh, I didn't get an answer to this question. I need somebody to ask this question. They're basically going and talking to voters and doing it directly. She's going to do interviews. She's going to take questions. It's going to do a debate. I think what it's frustrating for me, as in somebody that wants it to covered, is Donald Trump doesn't play by the rules, and the press is upset that Donald Trump plays that rule. So they somehow want to enforce the rules that Donald Trump doesn't play by and enforce them on Vice President Harris. And I think she's smart to not play that game.
Right. So recently she walked over to the press while at an airplane. She was getting on and she said, OK, what do you have for me? Ask me your questions. And almost all the questions were about Donald Trump, not about her policies and things. And so she didn't answer them. She kind of, knocked them down because her responses would have been giving more oxygen to these ridiculous charges that he makes. So if the press can't come up with good questions for her, why play that game?
Well, that's that's the thing. And you got a candidate that they treat completely fundamentally differently with Donald Trump. They let him get away. There's no follow-up questions. And if Vice President Harris had a press conference like Donald Trump, everybody would question her sanity in the course of this. And I think we've gotten so used to this divergent way that Donald Trump deals with people versus everybody else that the press needs to come up with. I mean, I don't get, like, what questions do they think are not getting answered? They're all probably process questions that voters could care less about.
Let's go to quickly, Nancy. Nancy, we got a little bit of time. You're on the air.
Yes, I don't know if you've touched on this. I know you mentioned something about how more and more Republicans are supporting Harris, but I want to know, why aren't they being more aggressive? Why aren't there ads on Fox with some of these Republicans talking? Not put down ads necessarily, but just pointing out that his cabinet has disavowed him and pointing out why it's important to vote Democrat this year, not because of Trump's politics, but because of the fact that he is a felon and he doesn't know what he's doing and doesn't believe in the Constitution. I want to see the Republicans more active.
All right. Well, Nancy, we got a minute here. So, Matthew?
Sure. So I think what we saw, there was a Zoom yesterday, the day before, with Republicans for Harris. 72,000 people joined this Zoom of Republicans for Harris, led by a bunch of former Republican elected officials across the country, mayors, former lieutenant governors. So I think you're going to see more of that. My expectation is those groups are going to do advertising as they raise money and they come out of the Democratic convention. So I think she's touched on something I think that is important, not only to convince other Republicans to vote for Harris, but actually more importantly, swing voters, when they hear Republicans criticize Donald Trump, it makes them more apt to vote for Harris because they hear Republicans of their own tribe criticizing Donald Trump.
And so it just seems here we are with this candidate. Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. You don't think anything's going to knock him off that? I mean, they could have had Will Hurd.
I don't think. I mean, if Donald Trump was smart, I guess he would sort of step back. But I think it's so ego-driven and he's just so consumed by this. And I think part of this is he probably knows that this is his one last stand to stay out of jail or stay away from being held legally responsible for various things. I think that's one of the big reasons why he's running. And I think he's desperate at this point. And I think a desperate person is going to get crazier and crazier.
The election's not yet here, so anything can happen. Matthew Dowd, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always good to be with you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Two women have filed federal complaints against Texas hospitals that they say refuse to treat their crisis pregnancies, leading both women to endure pain endanger their future fertility and put them at extreme risk. The Biden administration issued guidance to hospitals in 2022 that said doctors must perform an abortion if they believe it's necessary to stabilize the patient's emergency medical condition. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton challenged that, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with Paxton, effectively ruling that Texas hospitals cannot be required to perform life-saving abortions. That ruling remains in effect even after the Supreme Court ruled in a separate case stemming from an Idaho abortion ban. These Texas cases are not alone. More than 100 pregnant women in medical distress who sought help from emergency rooms were turned away or they were undertreated since 2022. That's according to an Associated Press analysis of federal hospital investigations. So Amanda Seitz is with us. She is an Associated Press reporter covering federal health care policy. And her recent story is dozens of pregnant women, some bleeding or in labor, are turned away from ERs despite federal law. And Amanda, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David.
It seems like your story really paints a picture, lays out the complications that we're seeing from these abortion bans when it comes to women who are having crisis pregnancies. Can you tell us more what you found?
Yes. Well, in Texas in particular, we saw a challenge with these two new cases where women were coming forward. We saw a challenge with how emergency rooms are treating ectopic pregnancies in particular. Those are very dangerous pregnancies that have no chance of survival. And they're dangerous because they happen when a fertilized egg attaches outside of a woman's uterus. And the egg really has no place to grow, and it can burst or it can rupture a reproductive organ in the process of trying to grow. And it can endanger not only the woman's reproductive health, but her life as well. And what we're hearing from doctors in Texas who have recently left Texas is that because it's difficult to conclusively diagnose an ectopic pregnancy, it's giving doctors a little bit of pause in treating these and terminating the pregnancy, despite Texas law allowing there to be an exception and allowing those doctors to terminate pregnancies in those cases.
We saw in one of the Texas cases where the woman went to a Round Rock hospital and she was bleeding and in pain. And rather than treat her, they gave her a pamphlet about miscarriages and they sent her home. And it was later that her conditions worsened and she had a rupture and a crisis and needed emergency medical care. It seems like, the hospitals, are they just not capable or willing? They don't want to get involved? I mean, I know you can't explain that, but, this case is told, I can imagine for anyone who is pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant, that they're wondering about what should I do?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really interesting point that you raise, is we don't exactly know what is causing the medical staff at these emergency rooms to not give the treatment. We know that the abortion bans, doctors have told us, do complicate the decision making. But is it, hospital leadership that doesn't want them to maybe perform an abortion or terminate a pregnancy? Is it the confusion on the doctor's end over what they can and cannot do in these states? Those are all theories that we've heard in these cases. And, ultimately, unfortunately, in the case of Kylie Thurman that we wrote about, she went home. She didn't really understand what she was going through. She went home with a miscarriage pamphlet, didn't know she was having an ectopic pregnancy because the doctor, told her that it was a miscarriage in the emergency room. And, by the time that she finally got the simple treatment, which is methotrexate, to end her ectopic pregnancy, it was too late, and she later needed to return for a third time and have a surgical removal of the pregnancy, which resulted in the loss of a fallopian tube for her.
This is really confusing to find out where we are in Texas with what medical care can be given to women who are having a crisis pregnancy. Because the Texas Medical Board is still not clear. They haven't issued their guidance yet. And we've seen that the stakes are really high for doctors if they are accused of are convicted of performing an illegal abortion, they could spend a life in prison. So, and then we've seen from our Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton that he is going to enforce these things. So that might be why these hospitals are so reluctant to provide the medical care that is needed. And you're saying this is happening in other states, even in your reporting in California.
Yes. So I want to be clear. In Texas, one thing that we found that was a little unusual was a pattern of doctors themselves coming out into the waiting rooms. We had three cases, actually, where medical staff would not even see the patient. That was a little unusual, and that was a trend that we saw specifically in Texas. And, you know, doctors we've talked to believe that there is a fear of just treating pregnant patients in the state. Yes, we did see other cases, violations of the federal law that occurred in other states too, some not with abortion bans even. And a lot of those cases appear to be attributable to some severe staffing shortages. There weren't enough doctors maybe on call, or we had some cases where a nurse maybe sent an ambulance or even a patient elsewhere saying that there just wasn't staffing available, there weren't beds available. So certainly that's another major concern that's going on for pregnant women right now when they're presenting at hospitals thinking they're going to show up and get help and treatment, and especially when they're in distress and they're not able to get the help that they need.
So we do have EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, and that went to the Supreme Court with that Idaho case. And then the Supreme Court ruled on that. And initially, you know, the news reports was like, well, the Supreme Court has sided with EMTALA, but not so fast. It actually, what actually happened with that SCOTUS decision?
Yeah, and I want to back up and just kind of give an overview of what EMTALA provides for every American. It says that if you present at an emergency room, one at a hospital that receives Medicare funding, that they need to give you a medical screening exam. And if you indeed have a medical emergency, they have to give you stabilizing treatment. If they're unable to do that, they need to arrange for transportation, either, say, by an ambulance or even a helicopter, for you to be transported to a hospital that does have the resources to treat you. And so what the Supreme Court was, the federal government actually aggressively sued Idaho over its state law that did not provide for an exemption in the state if a woman needed an abortion to save her health. And the Biden administration said that that was in conflict with the federal law that says, clearly says you need to stabilize patients if they're in a dangerous situation. So the Supreme Court has basically kicked that case back to work its way through the courts. For right now, doctors can provide terminations of pregnancies in Idaho. They did grant that, but it has the ruling really has no bearing outside of the state of Idaho. And the federal government has said that there are several states that are in conflict with this federal law with their state abortion laws. And one of those states is Texas as well, which is, as you noted earlier, is Texas, and they are suing the federal government over its guidance on this law in regards to abortion.
So where we are in Texas, according to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and that Texas hospitals cannot be required to perform life-saving abortions if someone presents themselves at an emergency room. They can just not do that. But now we're seeing this challenge from these complaints here, these two women saying that they want the feds to get involved. They're saying we want enforcement.
Yes, and the reason that this claim is allowed to go forward in this case, despite that court ruling that you mentioned, is because Texas actually does have an exemption in the case of ectopic pregnancies. The law says that ending an ectopic pregnancy is not considered an abortion. However, to your earlier point, David, doctors are up against some real penalties here. They perform an abortion that is deemed illegal if they're convicted of that. And there's just a lot of confusion in these emergency rooms over what is and is not illegal. And do doctors want to take that risk of finding out that maybe they made a mistake, maybe they made the wrong diagnosis. And
right, because they want to have medical reviews of these decisions. That's one of the things that's been argued that before the Texas Medical Board. But the bottom line that you come up with in your reporting is that, you know, women who are not seeking abortions, women who want to become mothers, women who want to continue to have children, are seeing that that's being taken away from them because of the abortion ban.
Yeah, that is unfortunately true. And that was the case for Kylie Thurman, the woman that I spoke to. She of going forward with the surgery that would remove her ectopic pregnancy because she didn't want to lose her fertility. She said her doctor, she was bleeding out actively, and she asked her doctor to give her 2 hours to think about it. She was still so conflicted. And the doctor eventually had to come in and tell her either you're going to have this surgery or you could risk bleeding out and dying.
Amanda Seintz is an Associated Press reporter covering federal health care policy. Her latest story is dozens of pregnant women, some bleeding or in labor, are turned away from ERs despite federal law. Appreciate your reporting, Amanda. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, David. Have a great day.
You too. And when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about searching strange new worlds for life across the galaxy. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio will host a conference on the latest efforts to find planets outside our solar system that could be the home for life. The second Texas Area Planetary Science Meeting, or TAPS, taking place as tomorrow and then also on the next day at downtown UTSA campus. TAPS is looking to strengthen interaction between Texas planetary exoplanet scientists and astrobiology, the community, and foster collaboration. And we're joined now by Chris Packman. He is the PhD and a UTSA professor of physics and astronomy. And Julie Crook, she is a NASA Astrophysics Division Program Executive for the Habitable Worlds Observatory. And welcome both of y'all to The Source.
Hi, it's great to speak to you.
Hi, thank you.
So, Chris and Julie, before we get to this exciting conference you're going to be having, looking for life and other planets, Chris, can you tell me a little bit about this thing that's happening in the sky right now? We have Mars and Jupiter doing an exotic dance in the sky.
Oh, it's a really beautiful sight in the pre-dawn sky. It so happens that the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, as seen from the Earth, they almost look like those planets are connected. They're almost overlapping in the pre-dawn sky. So it's just a beautiful sight to see. It's a fairly unusual occurrence. The last time it happened was about 6 years ago. So it's really beautiful. Also in the sky right now is the tail end of a Perseus meteor shower. And some folks have been lucky enough to see the northern lights, so those beautiful dancing lights in the sky. So it's a great time to be looking up at the sky right now.
So we can see Mars and Jupiter doing this thing with our naked eye. We don't need to go to an observatory.
Absolutely. If you just look up in the sky before dawn, the two brightest points of light before the sun rises, of course, the two brightest points, they're going to be Mars and Jupiter, and they'll be extremely close together. They're just the actual best time to look at it was this morning, but they're going to be slowly moving apart from each other as viewed from the Earth, as their orbits carry them around the sun. But it's going to be a great sight for at least a few nights to come.
All right. Look for that. So, Julie, tell me about this search for habitable worlds and looking to exoplanets that could be the home for life. So exoplanets, what's an exoplanet?
An exoplanet are planets around other stars. So if we know our star is the sun, and we call our planetary system the solar system, so any nearby stars that host planets, those planets around those host stars would be called exoplanets, exosolar planets.
So far away. You need the latest in technology in order to figure out what they're doing. What are you looking for So when you say life, I mean, we're not talking about, it could be anything, right?
That is correct. It could be anything. And so what we're looking for, first of all, this will be the first mission ever designed to directly image exoplanets and then characterize their atmospheres or look at the constituents, the building blocks of their atmospheres and look for signatures of oxygen, methane, ozone, carbon dioxide, and look at their abundances, because typically what happens if there was an alien looking at our Earth from, you know, really far away, they could tell that there's life on Earth, because you can have methane by itself, or you could have carbon dioxide or oxygen by itself on planets. But the fact that there's enough replenishing of one with the other, and the abundances of those things, that you know there's a biological process on our planet.
And this could be created by microbes?
It could be microbes, it could be algae, it could be any kind, it could be cows or...
Well, cows in space, that's the headline. How are we able to determine, you know, so far away, exoplanets, you know, solar systems far away, you know, light years away, literally, what instruments are we able to use to figure that out?
Yeah, so we know for a fact from missions like Kepler and TESS, and even Hubble's been able to image some exoplanets. But basically, mostly from TESS and Kepler, and basically, we know from their masses, so we've typically used the transit method to detect planets by looking at the dip in the solar that you see from
the stars.
We're
assuming that the planet will go between us and their sun, their star, and we're able to measure that.
Right. So that's how we've been able to detect them in the past. However, so this will be the very first time ever, you know, in that past case, the planet and the orbit of the planet in front of its host star has to be perfectly aligned so that it goes in front of us. And so you see that dip in the light.
So Julie, this is the big question that people have been asking since we've looked into the night and seen the stars. Are we alone here? And do you think this is going to be able to give us some kind of answer?
Absolutely. We are going to be able to search in our solar neighborhood, looking at hundreds of planets, and we will also be able to put our own solar system into context. I mean, we have 8, some would argue 9 planets around our sun. And so that seems like a lot. And, go ahead, Chris.
So David, locking onto your comment there, one of the quotes that I remember reading in a report once just really struck me. As you said, humanity, since the dawn of humanity, has wondered, are we alone in the universe? Our generation is the first generation that has the formidable science and technology to be able to answer that question. That's why I'm so thrilled to be part of the project that Julie's leading. We're going to be able to answer that, at least address that question. It's a thrilling time.
Julie, are we certain about, in our own solar system, that question has been answered?
So no, I mean, there are still lots of really, really, really interesting places to explore, such as Enceladus and Europa. There's icy moons that have their outer crust is made of ice, ice. And so the thought is there might be liquid water underneath. So we have not exhausted our search for and, you know, knowledge of whether or not there's life. And Chris wants to say something.
So it's really exciting thinking about the moon called Europa. That's got that icy crust, and we're pretty sure that there's a liquid ocean underneath there. And actually, NASA's got a mission called the Europa Clipper. One of the instruments is led from San Antonio by a principal investigator called Dr. Kurt Rutherford. So we're really excited to see that that UT San Antonio and the Southwest Research Institute connection into those probes and into that direction that we can be looking for life within our own solar system.
All right, I have a question from a caller, and Jose. And Jose, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question regarding jumbos. Jumbos, of course, are rogue planets roaming, and we've been able to locate them in the constellation of Orion. Are we able to what has the research shown in terms of what they are and their capacity to hold life?
All right, Jose, thank you for the question. And so, Chris, Julie?
So they are really fascinating that there's these so-called rogue planets, planets that are not tied to a star. We need to understand how they're out there. It could be that they interacted, for example, it could be the gravitational pull of, say, a Jupiter on a planet like Mars might actually throw that planet out of the solar system. That could happen in other solar systems. It's not going to happen in ours, at least not for the foreseeable future. And so we need to understand how those planets are flung out. The idea of life there, well, it's pretty tough because there's no real energy source. Unless there's some sense of an internal energy source, maybe a radioactive decay of the core, it would seem to me, at a first guess, exceedingly unlikely that would be hospitable for life. So, fascinating question. This is an area of research that the James Webb Space Telescope is really helping out with, and it's a thrilling area, but it's brand new. So I'm very impressed with your caller that he is keeping up to speed so much. So thank you for that excellent question.
So Julie, in the little time we have left, tell us a little bit more about this conference, the Texas Area Planetary Science Meeting, talking about the search for planet holding life, maybe holding exoplanets.
Yeah, so I can tell you more about the Habitable Worlds Observatory, but the Texas Area Planetary Science Conference is hosting. I think Chris knows more about the conference than I do, but.
So this conference is led by a relatively new faculty member here at University of Texas San Antonio. That's Dr. Jingting Yu. She's extremely energetic, and what she's trying to do is get the folks from across Texas to get together and discuss the latest and greatest results in the area of exoplanets. And this is, of course, astronomers, but it also includes planetary geologists, includes chemists, includes a whole range of various scientific disciplines. We need to marshal the brain power across the state of Texas, across the U.S., across the world, in various scientific disciplines to really tackle this wonderful question that, as you said, David, has been on the mind of people from the very advent of the start of the dawn of humanity.
Chris Packman is the professor of physics and astronomy at UTSA. Julie Crook is a NASA Astrophysics Division Program Executive for the Habitable World Observatory. And thank you both for joining us today. Appreciate your help.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.